When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.
Listen. Danny McMahon, aka Dodford on YouTube, is a creator who is passionate about filmmaking. His YouTube videos are high production value documentaries, and he has created videos that track the stories of icons such as Donald Glover, Adam Sandler, and Drew Barrymore. On the 27th upload to his YouTube channel, he began creating these story-led documentaries, and that's where everything started to change for him. Let's get into it with Danny. Danny, thank you so much for coming on Unboxed.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Obviously, you went to film school, studied film theory. That was your sort of bread and butter, if you will. How important is storytelling, documentaries, filmmaking? How important has that always been to you? And why is it the thing which sort of drives you?
I've never been able to do anything else. As a teenager and as a kid, like my dad would always be so angry at me because I didn't want to get a job. You know, genuinely, that's what it was. It's like, I used to have meltdowns because the idea of just doing a 9-to-5 crushed me inside. And I didn't know why that was. And I didn't know what I wanted to do with my time instead. And so there was many years of just feeling like creatively unsatisfied. I was like, do I want to paint? Do I want to, you know, sculpt? And genuinely, like, do I want to like work in Logic Pro and make beats? You know, it's just like, I didn't know exactly what it was that I wanted to do, but it had to be something creative. And that was my way for a long time. But I've always been interested in film and, you know, editing and stuff. And I would make films with my friends in like year six. And so it's always been a part of me. I didn't know I was going to take it seriously until uni, when I suddenly got thrust into like a group of people who were equally as crazy and passionate about it as I was. Mm. And it's, you know, validating, being surrounded by people like that. And so, yeah, I started taking it seriously. And so I guess it always has been a part of me. I just didn't really know it until fairly recently.
Yeah. What would be your advice to sort of aspiring storytellers in terms of making a great story? Like, you make incredible stories, you're exceptional at putting stories together, goes without saying. But like, what would be your sort of your foundational blocks? Like, how do you build a great story?
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. In fact, you know, often when people ask me this, I'm realizing that I often try and explain it in like easily digestible frameworks and like a process and stuff. And I often tweet about that as well. Like, I'll say, you know, blah, 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 do this, do X, Y to make sure that a story works this way. But really what I'm finding is that it has to be a subconscious thing. And why I struggle to articulate a lot about how I do things is because I just feel it. You know, it's a decision that you can't really explain, because it's once you're inside something for weeks and weeks that it just makes sense. And so with this Drew Barrymore documentary, part of the reason it feels emotional is because naturally you end up spending a month with them, end up spending 5 or 6 weeks with them. And so they become a part of you, and it feels like, you know, you know what they would say next, which is a really important thing and something that you can only do when you're immersed in their story. And so I think really, like, the biggest tip I can always give is, if you actually want to tell a story that will have an emotional impact and that you care about, you have to actually care about it. You have to put yourself inside those shoes. But it just takes that extra like 10 miles of, you know, getting obsessed with it. And you can't just, you know, you can't sit down. I couldn't sit down and churn out a wonderful emotional documentary on one person tomorrow. You know, I have to, the reason it takes so long is because I have to put so much time into knowing who they are.
Mm.
And it comes out in the product, in the products. And you, there's no amount of like recipes or secret formulas or hacks that will cheat that. You have to just actually believe in it yourself.
Yeah. And in terms of, I guess, the proportions of your process, what proportion would you say is this like the immersion into their world, the planning, the document? Like, what do one of those documents look like? Like, do you have any like on your foot? Like, just even in terms of the look, like, what?
I'd bring one up for you.
I'd be very interested to see. Like, is it? How deep is it? Like, how do you kind of...
They're like, it? I mean, they can get to like 60, 70, 80, 100 pages long. It's actually part of the process that I enjoy a lot. Just because I've got two employees, a researcher and a producer. And there's just like, I mean...
Oh, wow.
It goes and goes and goes and goes and goes and goes.
I mean, you just see the wall.
But that's like... Every sort of thought we'd have gets included in that. And it starts off with these really broad questions. Like with Keanu Reeves, it's coming up. We're really early right now. And so it's just, we think about themes that people associate with that person, these really kind of broad, big picture questions. And then you find out what your angle is and your direction and you kind of get closer and closer and closer and closer until you find out what your like specific honing point is. And that can take a long time. So it takes... several meetings and dozens of pages of research. But then once you know exactly what your like story points and chapters are, or, themes you want to discuss, then you can put a label on it and we can assign these labels to a different person in the team who, can then go out and collect quotes.
The label is almost like to dig into that thing. So you find a sort of, let's say a hook or an angle or an area, then you have like one person in the team go that 10 steps deeper, really.
Right. Yeah. And it's like, for example, Keanu Reeves right now, a significant and integral part of his life is grief. And, we can associate the word grief with one person and they go off and collect, just find out as much as you can about times that he's spoken about grief and mentioned it. He's actually been a challenge because he's really quiet and mysterious and he's had this crazy life, but never talks about it.
Yeah.
So it is a challenge sometimes, but, just working as a team and segmenting up these big questions, because at the beginning my deadlines would just get pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed because it just is this huge inconceivable thing ahead of you and you can get lost. So holding yourself accountable and holding each other accountable is like the only way forward.
And with the Adam Sandler one, what, out of interest, obviously that was a video that's the top performing video, right? I think it's 3.5 million views.
Close,
so.
Almost four, yeah.
4 million views, it's mad. Like, what was the sort of thing in that process where, what was like the defining point for you in that video? Like, what was there a moment when you were researching where you went, okay, this is gold, like it's specifically for him? And then go through some of the others.
I think when we first started researching that, we all decided, one of the key words here is comfort zone. And everything we found ended up lending itself to this idea of him cultivating this comfort zone that, he'd refined over many years with his friends and family. And he had, brought people on into his comfort zone on films and stuff. But because he had such a, cozy comfort zone, it gave him this ability to step out of it sometimes and take big risks and take big, swings. And when I started, when you think of an idea there and you find a one-liner about one person and you realize everything clicks into place and it all kind of, that's the North Star, that's really inspiring and motivating. But in this Drew Barrymore one, though, there's a better example. Very early on in the research, my researcher, Adam, he found these two clips. One is an interview from 1997 where she's talking to an interviewer and the interviewer says, "What's your dream?" And she says, "My dream since the day I was a kid was to be on a farm, to live with some animals and one night it will rain." And then the interviewer says, "One night it will rain, what's that got to do with it?" And she says, "I just love the rain." And then we found another clip, which is from only a couple of years ago, and it's just an Instagram video on her Instagram of Drew Barrymore running out into the outside, rain pouring down, getting soaking wet, laughing and being hysterical and crying. And, saying that, "I just love the rain, if you ever get any chance, go outside in the rain." And we found these two clips years apart.
No one pieced them together.
And we pieced them together and we thought, this is it. This is the ending. This is what everything will lead to. It will be, you know, she's finally reached a happy place. She's living her dream now. So like we had this early clip to you know, hint and then work all the way through. You go through her journey and you get to the final point where she's reached a happy point out in the rain, you know, as a grown up. Mm. And when you find those clips of gold sometimes, like you have to just use that and run with it. And everything kind of fell into place after that. And it's a beautiful, like that again, that was the North Star that just guided us. And it's, you don't always get that. So when you do, you have to like make sure that it's informing everything else. I wanted to find that balance where it feels like she's telling her own story, but I'm also including enough of me where you don't get kind of lost. And so I had to approach that. I was like, okay, I want this to be the culmination of everything I've worked on before leading up to this point. So it's hard to get to that though, but.
It's interesting though that you're saying the learning is actually to put almost use yourself as like a checkpoints for the audience, right? Throughout the video to keep it on track, but actually you're pulling yourself out. You're putting the person you're highlighting first and foremost.
Historically, I feel like I view voiceover as a bit of a cop-out. Like I try to avoid it at all costs. And I think it depends on the type of creator that you are. But for me, I just feel like I use it as a crutch. And when I use voiceover, I know I could be using actual, you know, primary sources to tell that story better. And I'm kind of just like cheating it. And so like the challenge is to try and eliminate that as much as I can.
To this Drew Barrymore video, why was this one particularly emotive to you? Like, what was different this time around, do you think?
I think we're delving into topics that I haven't really explored before. It's really, it's hard, you know.
She was abused, right?
She just kind of didn't really have any parental figures in her life. And so alcoholic at 9, you know, in rehab at 13. And so all these people who are exploiting her and using her and enabling her. And she had to learn these really harsh lessons earlier than anyone should. And so just on a pure topics wise, it's heavy stuff, which is a chat, like it's heavy to discuss, but also it enables so much more emotion when it comes to telling a story. And so I can get my hands dirty a little bit and push into that and poke at it, but it's always treading that line between being respectful as well.
Yeah.
So,
and how do you choose who to make these docs on? Like do you have a selective process that's more kind of personal or is it more based on the analytics, who you know will sort of work for the algorithm and for the kind of YouTube sphere, if you will?
For me, the main one is they have to actually inspire me. You know, like I wouldn't make a video or I just couldn't invest myself in a video about someone that I wasn't genuinely feeling moved by. I feel like there's got to be lessons to learn from their story.
Yeah.
But I feel like I resonate with. Obviously, it does come down to like who also has a clickable name, you know, and there's loads of really inspiring people out there in the world. But right now, the place I am as a creator, like working out what the packaging is for a person who's unknown, is hard. And so I'd like to one day get to a point where I can just make a documentary about someone down the street.
Yeah.
And it do as well, I think. But you've got to build a reputation as a creator and as a filmmaker, and like people trust your voice first to get to that. But one day, I want to get to that point.
That's a really good point, actually. Like for people who are sort of starting off, that in a way you do need to play the game. You do need to ride, you know, especially on YouTube, which is a search engine principally. Mm-hmm. You need to work with topics which can help you on that journey quicker, right? Otherwise, you know, you're going to be spending a lot longer to get to the point where you can then tell those stories. That's really interesting. And I remember, like for myself, and I remember the team, literally, like when the Sidemen video. Was created and put out. That video, bro, like I remember the group chat, got shared in the group chat, everyone was like, this video is sick, it's crazy. Remember, I think JG put it in and was just like, this is amazing.
So he saw it first?
I think he put it in our group chat first.
Wow.
And like we had like, everyone was talking about it because it was just the way you encapsulated the story so accurately. And I think the bit that was very like, I guess, consoling for everyone was actually how you had tracked the details so sort of accurately and clearly you know, the process. And it'd be interesting to get into that, but clearly the process was quite thorough. So yeah, what was the process to putting out that video, and how did that video, when it started to really pop off, which it did, how did that sort of change things for you?
I don't know. Yeah, the research for that one, it was a good place for me to start because I consider that the first documentary that I made. And it was a good one for me to start with because the research was all much more natural when I felt like I'd, you know, I'd grown up with the Sidemen. I already knew so much of their story and journey anyway. And so it wasn't unnatural for me to put things together because I already knew the whole course of events. There were still things I had to find details and specifics on, but it was during that process where I realized, oh, I really love this. And so, yeah, I consider that the first one. The process then, if I look back, it was just cluttered and messy. I didn't know what I was doing. And so, you know, I have these big, long Google documents where we do all the research. And, you know, nowadays it's like coordinated and labeled and stuff. Yeah. But back then I was just throwing shit at all. And somehow I managed to put it together. I think I ended up having a bit of a nightmare in the edit, but I've mitigated that now. But it clearly responded. And so I was very happy when that picked up.
Yeah. You say, what happened in the edit that was
I don't know. I'm big on preparation and I've always been, but nowadays I'm doing these big paper edits and I'm analyzing exactly what needs to be done and what needs to be found for a specific moment. But it was just, I was improvising it at that time, which I think you should be doing when you're a new creator or when you're still finding what your format is. You need to experiment.
And what was it like seeing, obviously, you know, you make these quite personal stories about people and, you know, you get into their details and their rise and their narrative, their intentions, motives, etc. There's a lot in there. Like, what was it like actually seeing the Sidemen then respond to it and talk about it and, like, you know, actually validate, I guess, the time and the stress and the nightmare in the edit and all those things, kind of give that bit of validation. What was that like for you?
Yeah, it was very surreal. Like, I think that was a huge wake-up moment, actually, especially when JJ, like, put it on his story. I don't know. It's easy to kind of feel like you're in a bit of an echo chamber when you're working on things for a long time. And I was at that point, I think I'd only been, I felt like I'd been grinding for 2 years and, you know, on TikTok. And it wasn't, none of it was really validating for me. I wasn't really feeling fulfilled. And so that was one of the earliest like proper ventures into, okay, let's try YouTube now. Let's see what happens if I give myself a few weeks on a video as opposed to a couple of days. Yeah, like kind of just seeing that I got the credit straight away and people, you know, the people I was targeting saw it, which was part of the reason I did it. I thought I can probably let them see this and, you know, share it. So it was part of the plan.
Yeah.
It wasn't like the reason I was doing it. But I knew that there was a good place to start with some people who felt like they were accessible.
I mean, is there a lesson in there, do you think, for people who are coming up around, you know, quality over quantity? And also for you, right? If you were churning out TikToks, you were making loads of videos, but nothing was really hitting, you know, and then the difference between that moment when you stopped and said, right, I'm going to give myself 3 weeks to do this.
Yeah.
Do you think there's a lesson in that? I mean, did that really wake you up to the kind of quality over quantity sort of mindset, if you will?
I think you have to earn the right to start considering quality. Like, especially when you're a beginner, you have to put in the reps. And I've been editing and making films and videos, you know, since I was like 10 years old. But when it came to like the creator economy, I was still a youngling, really, really new and didn't know what I was doing from like 2021, 2022. And so the reason I felt like I earned the right to start trying for more quality things because I was putting in those reps on TikTok and just building up this library of skills, a quantity, you know? And so it would be unwise move to say, I'm trying YouTube, you know, from scratch and just put a month into a video because you need to learn from the process and try new things and realize what you like and what you don't and what you're good at and what you're bad. That way you can actually move from it and learn. So yeah, that was a risk though, I think. At that point, I was really scared and worried about putting all my eggs in one basket on YouTube.
Yeah, fair. And you're now working with the Sidemen team.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. So what's that process been like? How did you kind of come to start working with the production team? And what has sort of maybe surprised you about the process that goes in behind the scenes?
Well, Victor reached out to me and he had he was very nice and a lot of very nice things to say to me. And he seemed enthused about my like approach to storytelling and maybe more so like my approach to YouTube. And, you know, that was part of the imposter syndrome. I was like, what could I possibly lend that you guys aren't smashing already, you know? And so just being approached by him was an amazing experience. And like, you know, just being like noticed essentially. But like, yeah, he wanted to use some of the knowledge I've got. Or I don't think it's even knowledge. I don't think I know anything that no one else does. It's just maybe I'm using it in a different way in terms of like the storytelling and the Sidemen videos. And so it's just simply consulting, and they'll send a draft or an early version of the edit, and I'll just watch it through and, you know, pick apart, analyze, like, how would I shift things around here? How would I push in emotion? How would I switch up the music? So it's like, genuinely, I have so much fun doing it, because it's just, I have all the creative freedom to kind of just pick apart a video and think about how I would frame it, but I don't have to do, there's no pressure of actually doing it myself. So it's a dream. It's really great.
So, like, narrative direction without having to do the actual edit.
Yeah, like not having to put hours in on the desk, which is perfect.
Yeah. And you mentioned editor and producer. I want to get more into your sort of structure and, I guess, the evolution of that. Obviously, it was just you doing it on your own. Mm-hmm. Probably partly why it was chaotic, because to do all of this on your own is huge, right? Like, as an endeavor, and you're editing, you're doing the voiceover, you're doing every element independently. That's like so difficult, right? Mm-hmm. When did you bring people in? Why did you bring them in? And who did you bring in?
I brought people in because I was going mad. There's no way that it's sustainable to do those sort of, even it's just like locking yourself away in a room and doing anything for a month. It's not good for you. It's not healthy. And so just to like have someone to share ideas with and spitball stuff with, that's good enough on its own. I needed just that. So I brought in a researcher first because I knew that that was the part of the process that I wasn't having as much fun with. And that's got to be a priority, I think. I found this guy called Adam Bright, who is crazy for that and loves doing it. And he...
Take it, Adam. Take it, please.
Yeah, genuinely. Yeah. And the first video he researched was my Jerry Seinfeld documentary. And he came up with the idea for that one. I just said, when we were doing a bit of a trial phase, I said, what would you want to make a video on if you could do anything? And he said, you know, like a sitcom, Jerry Seinfeld type of thing. And I said, sure, let's see what you can do. So he came back. And at that point, I had like a research process that I felt like was pretty good in my head. And I told him, okay, this is what I use as reference. How about you just like try and make a similar document in your way? And then he came back and he just like obliterated it. Just completely... you know, structured it in ways that I couldn't even comprehend. And so I thought, this is the guy. Not only are you like an animal at finding research, but you clearly like enjoy doing this.
Yeah. So in terms of mindset, I wanted to ask, like, what is, do you think, the most valuable asset that you have as a creator?
No one else is you, you know? That's easy to forget, but it's also your strongest point, you know? Like, that's what I lean on. I know that every single time we start these videos, we always think, how can we do this in a way no one else has? Because, you know, inherently documentaries is a story that's not happened to you. It's out there in the world. Anyone could tell that story. So what has to be fresh is the spin you put on it and how you frame it in your mind. And that's a superpower, and not to be understated. So lean into that. Don't try and follow what everyone else is doing. It's important in essentially the beginning to try and replicate some things and learn from that. But as soon as you feel like you have a voice yelling out from inside you, you have to follow that because it separates you.
Yeah. And looking ahead to, if you were to click your fingers 5 years time and you've done all the things you want to do, what is the one thing you'd like to be remembered by? It sounds like this is like a eulogy, but like, what's the one thing you'd like to be remembered by or thought of when people think of your name in 5 years?
Wow.
I'm saying it.
I actually don't think about the future much.
Neither, you know.
Huh?
Neither.
No, well, like, it's we're not there now.
No. You know?
But at the same time, reputation is important to me and I think to the brand. And I've got a very strong idea of what I want people to think about the idea of Dodford. Mm. Like, it's almost more important to me how people feel about a video before it comes out than how they feel about it after it came out. You know, I want there to be like a palpable sense of something is happening, you know? And so that takes years of cultivating and building trust in a collective of people. And I don't know if I'll ever get there, but there is like, that's a dream of, you know, like this Dodford Productions or whatever, you know, kind of part of the industry I'm in at that point. I want it to feel like it's a really strong brand that people get excited by and is not just churning things out all the time. It's everything's got a clear place in the world. Kind of like, you know, I want to eventually maybe be my own A24, you know, or something, have my own chain of productions.
Out of interest, what's your favorite film? And who's your favorite director?
Who else haven't asked you?
Director Noah Baumbach, who did the Meyerowitz stories with Adam Sandler, and Scorsese.
Yeah.
Tarantino. But like, thing is, when it comes to Steven Spielberg. Spielberg.
I was going to say, Spielberg is very much like your, you know,
I came up with a bunch of names. Big stories. Really, actually, at the end of the day, it's always Steven Spielberg.
Yeah. Favorite Spielberg film?
Catch Me If You Can, which is my favorite film.
Is it?
Yeah, I love that film. I just love, that's like classic Tom Hanks, Leonardo DiCaprio. But then I like a bunch of films that I don't know who even directed them. They just sort of like, you're like Lars and the Real Girl, which is Ryan Gosling. He's just this like troubled guy who falls in love with a sex doll. And so it's just wacky films like that. But at the end of the day, Catch Me If You Can, Steven Spielberg, E.T., classic bangers, Jaws. Yeah.
Do you ever watch them and get inspiration for your storytelling? Like, do you ever go back now that you're obviously making docs and films for living, actually go back and see, okay, well, oh, look, I see what you did there, or like, look at, do you ever look at scripts? Like, is there anything, do you look at any of those references still?
Yeah, I feel like all my references are traditional. I don't consume really any YouTube. I don't watch any like digital stuff really. And so I think everything that I use, I've subconsciously or consciously took on from a Netflix documentary or, you know, a movie I saw from a kid. I think everything, you know, my whole visual editing style has been informed from those like originally like true crime thriller documentaries and stuff. And so everything I've consumed ever, but like it's all been traditional.
If somebody's looking at what you do and says, right, I want to do this, I want to follow the same sort of path, what would be your number one piece of advice to them?
Well, in the same vein, trust what makes you you. Also, put in those reps. I'm just circling back to everything we said. Put in the reps.
It's bang quote. You've got to keep that one.
Yeah, don't be afraid to switch things up. If you want to do exactly what I'm doing, consume. You just got to like absorb people and absorb the stories that you're trying to tell. You can't just like tell a story that you don't, aren't emotionally connected to anyway. So yeah, just take the risk on yourself, and anything that you want to create, it's being creative is a risk inherently, I think, and putting things out into the world. So just trust what makes your voice your voice.
Yep, I love it. Looking ahead to the future now, so where do you see the creator economy going?
Personally, I'd like there to be more of an emphasis on the first word than the second word, more on creator and less on the economy. It's all like turning into kind of hyper-focused, retention-based, make the quickest buck possible. And in a certain way, that's never going to go away. But like, I think there is a world, a dream world for me where it's much more creatively influenced and inspired. And you could upload a passion project on YouTube and guarantee that it will, you know, believe that it would do well.
Yeah.
We're not there right now, but, and maybe we shouldn't be. I don't know what that would mean, but I like to see that world where you can just say whatever you want to say. Mm.
The more I've sort of mulled it, I feel like something new has to come. I feel like we've hit a short form tipping point where it's just, I don't know where it goes next, but everything's been subverted and shifted by TikTok and short form.
Maybe.
But I feel like something else has to come and smack it because, yeah, I don't know how much further it can go in its current form without without going down the line of programmed hyper optimization, super commercial, as you say, fast food to such an extent where people are trying to make gold within fast food, make a great, like, you know, set of chicken nuggets, but there's only so much you can do that, right?
Nice. Yeah.
So I don't know, maybe some, I don't know, I feel like something has to come, but I don't know what that is. Right, next question. So in a, you know, the film space, the world of filmmaking is rapidly shifting, partly because of TikTok and everything else. What are your thoughts on the future of filmmaking specifically?
I saw a tweet the other day, and someone had found a list of all like the top 20 directors in the world, and then had next to them the number of years it's been since they've made a contemporary film. And it's all these established directors right now, Spielberg, Scorsese, whatever, they're making films set decades ago, and they're kind of stuck in the past. And there needs to be a fresh new wave of creative minds who are passionate about telling stories now. You know, like you don't see, there's also been many directors talk about how they struggle, using smartphones in films. There's something inherently non-cinematic about an iPhone or like texting in a film. Mm. And that's the way they've seen it for a long time. But I know I've spent enough time on TikTok where people have made beautiful short films about what happens inside an iPhone, you know, and the texting and the social media and stuff. And Bo Burnham's one example of that, who's been doing it. But like young people now, 15-year-olds who are seeing the world in a whole new way and seeing a whole new world to create, that's cool. And it's gonna switch things up. And I think, I don't know, I love all those directors now, but like we need to start thinking about present day.
You're right, because it's like, where does cinema go? Because actually cinema is so baked in nostalgia, like everything's nostalgia, pretty much.
Yes.
Everything's about that feeling. Even like Top Gun Maverick being like the number one grossest film of last year, whatever it was, 800 million. It's like, that's all about the feeling of Top Gun, the people are reliving.
Right.
But there's no, and actually everything's franchise based because it's that nostalgia feeling, Marvel, all these formats and these worlds, which people get comfort in, to a point on comfort before.
Yeah.
But there's no, it doesn't seem like there's really a market for, in this, from in cinema especially, for new contemporary and everything's, but where is it? There must still be, maybe, or is this generation just so used to short form and so used to, you know, the sort of transient content that they're getting that they don't really want that new contemporary stuff? I don't know. And this is what I'm saying. There may be something new has to come. I don't know. What's your view?
I mean, that new Flash movie, you know, and they're just like making like CGI clones of old dead actors pretty much. And so I hate that. And that's, and then to your point, it's like just we're leaning on nostalgia for just the sake of nostalgia rather than actually trying to make an emotional impact. And I think that's partly due to there's just not been any, there's been a lack of new voices kind of being pushed into the industry, in traditional industry. And so,
yeah, because the money is in the nostalgia, so they don't want to take the risk, right?
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's always, filmmaking is a risk. And it's a negotiation process. And so using trusted people who have made a killing years ago, it's always a safe bet. Mm. But I don't know what it takes. Yeah. I think right now, the people who are making short films and masterpieces on TikTok just need to grow up a bit and start doing that with, you know, on YouTube. That's the next step. And then see what happens there.
Mm. I guess also the hard bit, it's a challenge, but people often don't make enough money on TikTok to get the infrastructure to then build on YouTube. And I think it's a tough thing there where people feel, actually, who would convert? Would there even be an audience for me? And it's taken that leap actually to go, no, you need to build here because that's where you're going to get the real long-term resonance and engagement rather than the sort of short-term transience maybe.
Yeah, I think you have to, like for me, it was I've edited videos for clients for years just to like sort of keep up, just make sure I could pay the bills pretty much. And that eventually afforded me the opportunity to take a risk on myself.
It's worked out. Lastly, who is your favourite creator at the moment?
Oh, don't ask me that question.
I know, as you say, you don't watch any creators right now, but who jumps out to you? You can look at your phone if it helps. Because this question is always very difficult.
Yeah, stumps me, right? The Beta Squad.
Yeah.
I think right now, like, I watched the I'm a Celebrity one recently. I watched it with my girlfriend. It's great. But like, I don't know. Recently, have you watched Styx? They've come up. They're a new creator and they just, they make like actual beautiful films about YouTubers, and they flew out to Ryan Trahan and made one of him.
Pop, the first video did.
Yeah.
Crazy numbers. It, like a few million, their account had zero, like 24K or something, or 10K even.
Yeah. And it just
had nothing, but the video was like absolutely huge.
I love that. It's because they've done something fresh and it's a new spin on a tired format. And you'll need more of that, I think.
Yeah. Love it. Well, Danny, thank you so much for coming on Unboxed.
It's been a privilege. Thank you, man.
Unboxed with Jordan Schwarzenberger is a Listen original in partnership with Arcade Media. The senior producer is Lucy Hunt and the senior digital producer is Alice Tilley. Unboxed is recorded at PRL Studios in West London with the support of Michael Kalizinski.